Tom, I have been wanting to make this podcast forever. You gotta protect the time, guys. You gotta protect the time. Otherwise, they just come and take it away. Everybody wants your time. They're trying to steal it. Nobody wants you to have your own time. But, you gotta do those important things. You gotta get that podcast done. You gotta get your work done. It's a lot. And I really want to make this podcast something different, something unique. But not just different for the sake of whimsy, where we're being unique just to say that we're unique. I wanted it to be unique with a real purpose. So, there's a lot of podcasts out there about self-development, and as podcasting gets a lot more popular, there's a lot more podcasts as well about gaming. I really wanted to mix the two because that's my sweet spot right in between self-development and gaming. So I wanted the first podcast, and ideally many, many other episodes to just be about how we can align self-development with gaming, how we can game productively, how we can use gaming in a way that enriches our lives and enriches other people's lives. And yeah, I didn't script this intro. I didn't want anything to hold me back from getting this information out there and getting this idea out into the universe. So, we're gonna get started now. And when I say we're gonna get started, I mean that in the grandest sense possible. Let's go, boys. Hero mode activated. Let's go change the world. Let's do it. I said boys, and I heard it when I said it, but I didn't mean to say it. What I had meant to say was that, girls can play games too, and there's lots of girls who love games, and I just wanted to clear that up from the other intro, but I really like that intro, so I can't change it right now, especially with this app. This is a new app that I'm using, and we're just gonna assume that boys are inclusive of the girls, and yeah, this is gonna hurt me a lot later on in my podcasting career, isn't it? But yeah, actually, the reason I made that joke, it's because the first person I'm gonna be covering, is actually Jordan Peterson, and he's a pretty controversial guy. I mean, love him or hate him, he's famous now and he's very successful, and his book is one of the best-selling books ever in multiple categories. I bought the audiobook, I bought the actual book for my girlfriend, I pirated the book, I've gotten the book in all sorts of legal and illegal ways because I think it's such an important book that, despite what you think about the author and his views, his views on the way the world is, he's probably one of the most important social commenters right now. Because he really brings forward the truth. Even if it's not your truth, it's a truth that needs to be addressed that a lot of people are thinking, and we need to have conversations about these kinds of things. But I was reading this book, and whenever everything I kept reading, I kept thinking of games for some reason. I kept thinking, where I see some of the most chaos in this world is in games, is in gaming, and maybe that's just a consequence of where I currently am right now. Yeah, it really might be a consequence of, of my vision, of what I'm focused on. But, when you look at the gaming stats, at this point, a decent percentage of the world are gamers, and part of that reason is mobile phones, and the other reason is because, personal PCs have become so cheap now. They're using gaming for education, using gaming for virtual reality. It's everywhere, right? And I'm gonna jump right ahead and say there needs to be a bigger conversation that needs to be had in terms of how we behave in these games. It's not the mom conversation. It's like, oh, that game has cursing in it, or that game has, pixel nudity, which apparently people were worried about at some point, or that game has some violent things in it, which everything, life has violence in it. And the whole point is that, when you sit down to play a game and how you act in that moment, it matters. When you connect your fingers to your keyboard and your mouse, your ears to your headphones, your eyes to your screen, in that moment, you are that person. That's why games are so popular. That's why it's so transformative. You really become that being for that period of time. You've sat down and you've chosen out of all the things you could be doing. Well, you could be watching videos, you could be listening to music, you could be reading books. Instead, you chose an interactive form of media where, if only for a couple seconds, because you can die that fast in some games, you decided you're going to take on that task and you're going to overcome the obstacles in that virtual world as that character, and that means something, and how you go about that matters. And what I want to do, I want to lay out, you know, the 12 rules for life, an antidote to chaos, to help you master games, to help you master the chaos of games and the chaos within yourself. And that's what the first podcast is going to be about, and that's what we're going to get started in doing right now. Rule 1, stand up straight with your shoulders back. So lobsters, right? Do you know they run on serotonin, just like humans do? So when a lobster wins a fight, his serotonin increases. And it spreads out and it signals to all lobsters around him that he's the victor, he's the winner, right? And it shows the tallies of his victory in his posture. He's puffing up his chest, he's saying, I'm the king now, right? And the ones who lose, they get smaller. They go into their own version of the fetal position and they scurry into their little corners and get smaller. And so you might say, okay, what does that have to do with anything? And you don't get it. We evolved from lobsters. We split off from them from an evolutionary perspective millions of years ago. It's the same thing. That's why if you give a lobster antidepressants, it gets big again. So with humans, having this straight posture, it signals readiness. Standing up straight is an injunction to combat. That's why soldiers stand up straight. It's not, I'm combative, like I'm aggressive and I'm friendly and don't mess with me. Rather, it's Superman mode. You're puffing out your chest and you're saying, I'm ready to take on the world and all the misfortune and malice that comes along with that. So when you sit down to start a game, stop with this initial mindset of, you know, I'm not very good, or my teammates usually suck, they're horrible, and you know, I've had a rough day today and I just want to sit down and have the perfect game, because that's not going to happen. Or I'm so tired, so I'm probably going to play really badly. Or, you know, I'm such an unlucky player, this always happens to me. Stop making yourself small. Stop lowering your serotonin. And you're saying, oh, how should I act? You know, you're such an expert in this, how should I act? And that's simple. How do you usually want your own teammates to act? What type of teammates do you like? It's the charismatic ones. The ones who aren't just charismatic, but they're capable. They don't just get emotional as soon as a few bad things happen. They don't lose their positivity and their ability just because some unfortunate things happen that is literally programmed into the game. They're the ones who do not use their own weakness as an excuse to give up or to be malicious. Nah, you don't want to be a player like that. You go into that game and you signal your readiness to engage with that game. And you know what else? You can always tell who the small lobsters are in that game lobby. They're usually complaining. They're petty. They literally act small. And this often reduces your own faith in the outcome of that game. You know, it's the same thing when you see a big opposing lobster on the other team. You can see his tallies are represented, not just in the way he acts, but his level, his rank, his awards, his badges, his accomplishments. That's why you get nervous against good players. Even though in real life they're probably smaller than you or not as smart, you can sense their strength and size within that dominance hierarchy, within that competence hierarchy. And the only way you stand a chance, or at least become a better player regardless of the outcome, is if you face it forthrightly, with the intention to be strong, to learn, to overcome. And that's not a guarantee that you'll win, but it's a guarantee that you won't be pathetic, and that you will win in the future in all the ways it matters. Sit up straight with your shoulders back. Treat yourself like you are someone responsible for helping. People are more likely to give prescription medication to their dogs than they are to take it for themselves. And that needs to change. You need to take care of yourself. You need to treat yourself as if you are a valued friend. You need to treat yourself as if you're a friend and you're teaching them this game and you're trying to get them to achieve two basic tasks. You want them to get better and you also want them to be a fun, kind player, right? And you see, the first part of that is that a lot of people think in these games that they don't matter or there's no consequence, right? It's a bit of a nihilistic approach to it. And then if there's no consequence, it means you can just do whatever you want, you can act however you want, and no one will call you on it. But what you're really doing, you're corrupting your own character. And the other assumption is that what you do does not have a real effect on other people or in that world. But that's a lie. You're lying to yourself. You know it has an effect on other people. You know it has an effect on that world. That's why you do it. That's why you keep doing it. You like seeing the effect your actions or your lack thereof actions have on that world. So you know that to be untrue. And, you know, it's really important to tell yourself that you are necessary. You're an important part of that world. You could be playing the biggest game in the world. You could be playing, you know, League of Legends. You could be playing Fortnite. You could be playing any game. You're telling yourself, I'm just one guy. What I say doesn't matter. But how many games do you play per day? You literally play with hundreds of players per day. The things you say to these people, it echoes into how they treat other people. And it generally creates the general community around that entire game. And you can see that depending on which games you play, you can see the communities are drastically different. And yes, part of that is how they treat other people, but the first thing you need to do is look at your own self and see, you know, how can I be not just a better player but a better person inside of that game. And yeah, you don't want to become that self-destructive, contemptuous player that you don't want to play with. We tend to not be able to see ourselves in the moment when we act this way. We act like trolls, we get mean, we get pissy about things that aren't in anyone's control. We are sore losers. It's just not the way to be. It's not the way to have a fun gaming experience, and it's not the way to become a better player. And you know how to become a better player too, because you know what? You tell people all the time how they can become better players. You tell them to go watch replays, to go watch a stream, to go read a guide, to learn, to spend time learning aspects of the game. Yet you yourselves, you know your shortcomings, but you won't go do it yourself. Because part of your ego is telling you that you don't have to, or you're good enough, or you'll just focus on this. You know better, you know you can be better, and you know you can treat others better. And the other part of that is that you need to lay out your gaming life in a productive way. You need to lay it out in a way that it works for you. You know, if you had a friend and they were asking you, you know, oh, how often should I play this game? You know the answer to that. You know, maybe you should play this game 2 hours a day, right? Yet you yourself, you spend 4 to 6 hours a day playing that game. And you know around the third or fourth hour, you don't even enjoy it anymore. It makes you sick. It makes you hate the game. It makes you hate yourself. It makes you hate life. But you keep going. You keep mindlessly pouring yourself into the game. And by the time you're done, you have so little energy to get anything else done that you just play more games that make you even more unhappy. And you know there's games in your life that is making you unhappy. So you need to ask yourself, what would happen if I created a gaming schedule? What would happen if I stopped that? If I stopped letting my emotions make me play longer or even shorter, because I know a lot of you out there are rage quitters. What if I actually stuck to the game for a certain amount of time? I practiced it. I had a certain level of self-awareness about myself. And I really, really tried to do that. I tried to accomplish that. Would I become a better player? Would I treat others better? Would I have more energy to do other things in my life that need doing? And the answer to that is, you probably would, but you don't know until you try. And you need to try, and you need to be honest with yourself. Treat yourself as if you were someone you were responsible for helping. That's a huge brain hack, and you were given it right here for free. You always know the best advice to give other people, but you don't follow the best advice. You know the best advice. You know where to find the best advice. You can Google the best advice. This is the internet. You can find the best advice right here on this podcast as well. It's your choice to become a better person, to become a better player. And that's the other rule too. Treat yourself like you are someone responsible for helping. Befriend people who want the best for you. You'll always know a good friend in a game. Because when something good happens to you, they are also happy for you. When you hit a new level, a new accomplishment, a new rank, you gain a new item, that person is happy that you achieved something new, that you rose on that hierarchy, that you climbed a ladder of success. They won't tell you that you only got it because of a bug, or you played a specific character, or because of a specific item. They'll be happy that you reached a new level in your gaming life. And alternatively, when something bad does happen to you, they'll listen to your problem. They won't be glad you're suffering. They won't say, "I told you so," right? Or they might. Some even good friends can say, "I told you so," and then proceed to give you good advice. But the best ones will skip that part. They'll help you problem solve. They'll help you fix whatever hole that you've dug yourself into. They will tell you when you are doing the wrong thing, when you're making a mistake that you'll regret at a later point in time. Now, some games are subjective, so you ought not to always listen to them, but you should acknowledge what they're saying. And you'll be around players that don't want the best for you. They aren't happy when you do well. They are happy when you are suffering. And you're not obligated to play with these players. You're not obligated to continue communication with these players. And you might think you do out of some notion of being mature or dealing with bad personalities. But if they make you more toxic or they make you not the best teammate, you need to be away from these people. A lot of these players in games, they'll try to drown you. They'll take kills away from you. They'll take items away from you. They'll put you into situations that they know you will have a hard time getting out of. You do not want to be with this player. Two drowned players is not an improvement over one. Two players at a low rank is not better than one player at a high rank. You need to take a hint from lifeguards. When lifeguards are trying to save a drowning victim, they save them using a certain technique. They do not allow themselves to be pulled down by that person, whether intentionally or unintentionally, because one drowned lifeguard means a lot of drowned people, because that lifeguard needs to live on, not just to live his own life, but to save other people who are drowning. So you have no moral obligation to drown with that person. You have no moral obligation to be a bad player with that person. And you might ask, well, then how can I help these players who are not as emotionally stable or are not as skilled as me? And the answer is simple. You lead by example. You show them with your own actions how good they could be. You improve the general level of play in that community, and you improve yourself by consistently executing the best playstyle you can possibly put into that game and the best behavior you can put into that game. And that's how you show them. By making that your standard, the people around you will have to raise their standards. Rule 4. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not who someone else is today. So, being in gaming years, I've played with both some of the top players in the world and also some of the worst, most toxic players, and you wouldn't believe. And when you look at the mindset between these two players, often the low player has this idea that when they look at the pro players, that it's this big, unachievable level that it's impossible for them to hit because of all these different variables. And there's a big difference in mindset between them and the actual pro players. A lot of the pros, they don't compare themselves to everyone else. They don't spend all day looking at other players and say, "Oh, this guy is this good and this guy is that good." They focus on their own efforts. And it's really not productive to look at these other players, whether they're professional or not, and say to yourself that it's unfair, that it's unfair they're so lucky to have certain skills, or they have a better computer, or they have a better connection, or they've played the game longer, or they have better friends who've helped them get to that position. And yeah, the thing is, people's lives have different dimensions. And you say, okay, he's lucky because of this, but you don't know what tragedies he's been through in his life. And you don't know, you know, after he plays that game, you know, maybe he has to take care of a sick relative. You know, maybe he fights with his wife or his girlfriend. Maybe he's a bad person. Maybe it's not even his fault he's a bad person. Maybe he has a tough job. Maybe he's trying to pay his bills. Maybe he has different dreams that he's not realizing. And you don't know and it's not fair to judge yourself or to judge that person when really you're only getting a small glimpse of that picture. But it's also not fair to you. It's not fair for your own self, because you have your struggles, right? You know, you know you're coming from a different family, from a different race, from a different class of people. You know, you have entirely different fingers, entirely different brains, like, you know, your synapses fire, you know, completely differently. So it's not fair to compare yourself to that person, because you both don't live necessarily in the same dimensions. You are individually positioned in your different hierarchies, and the best thing you can do is to use yourself as your own ruler, as your own measuring stick, because you're very much like yourself. Everything is the same about you. And the thing is that part of this comes from this instinct you have that you're not everything you can be. You're not doing as well as you should be doing, but it's not their fault. And you just have to ask yourself, how can you be a little bit better tomorrow than you are today? What small things can you do to start off? What big things can you do that makes you better tomorrow than you are today? And, you know, maybe it's looking at a few decisions you made in your game. Maybe it's looking at a few conversations you had. Maybe it's looking at being distracted at the wrong times or not paying attention to certain details. But you just have to think about one game and let your ego get out of the way. And even in very harsh situations, there'll be a million things that appear to you that let you know that you could have done this better, even if it may not have affected the results in that specific instance. You know you could have done it with a lot more finesse and a lot more precision. And you know, the thing is that life is tragic. No one's not saying that these games don't have all these uncontrollable variables. Games are chaotic, but you have yourself and the things around you that you can put right personally, things that are in your general scope of being. How much better could your gaming be if you put everything right that you could about your gameplay, about your strategy, about your friends? And you have to ask yourself, do you have anything better to do? Is needlessly suffering and complaining every day and losing enthusiasm for some of the best games around, is that better than pausing and taking a real honest look at yourself? Do you really have something better to do than improve at the thing you spend hours doing every day? Rule 5. Don't let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. So even though this rule is actually about parenting, the thing is that in gaming, we often play the role of parents, because in these types of games, we usually have, you know, friends or teammates that are younger than us and that look up to us in a senpai coaching manner, where our mindset about the game and the way we make decisions about the game and people in those games, they very much take on that mode of being. And the thing is that Carl Jung had an idea about the shadow. You know, he considered it the dark side of humanity, you know, the roots of which reached into hell. And when he said hell, he doesn't just mean a physical hell, he also means a metaphysical hell. And the thing about hell is that it's very present in these games, and you know, in some of these games there's actually places called LO hell, you know, and often when you're in these games as well, or you're playing with some of these people, you feel like you're in hell. Like, at that moment, there's no conceivable level of suffering that you can take on at that moment that's higher in pain than what you feel in that moment, which is really funny for a virtual game that you don't have any skin in, but it happens. And the thing is that hell is a part of you, and people don't take that seriously, and they should. And one of the reasons they don't take that seriously is that they don't want to see that hell in themselves. And if you play games and you really care about it and you're pursuing meaningful pursuits, you will encounter the dragon, the chaotic dragon. And the thing is that a lot of people don't realize that that dragon is also in themselves. They understand exactly what it means to be a bad player, to be a bad teammate, to be a bad troll. And the thing is that they see this in the younger players around them. that they have a certain level of responsibility for, and sometimes they don't say anything about it. They just leave it be, like, you know, I'm probably not going to change this guy's personality or the way this guy approaches the game. And the thing is, it's actually very easy to start disliking that player, even if he doesn't actually direct his aggression towards you. It's, you know, the way he treats strangers, it's very easy for you to start disliking him and for you to not want to play with him. And if he is engaging you, and if he is engaging that aggression with you, you don't want that hierarchical challenge. You know, you're playing a game with someone to grow together. You're not playing that game so that person's ego can feel better, or that he feels like he can dominate you in that hierarchy, when that's not even your personal goal. And them making you feel this way, it can slowly turn you into a monster. And in fact, you've seen their behavior turn other people into monsters in the blink of an eye. They say one or two things and they just trigger a few other players in the game, and that's it, now you're in hell. And the thing is that you are a monster too. And everyone has a little bit of a monster inside them. And if you think you don't, you're the worst kind of monster, because you're unaware of it. And the monstrosities you do inside the games, it translates onto the younger players and onto the people around you that you're helping and you're playing with. You are a successful parent or mentor if the other players around you are desired as teammates by other players, because you've taught them how to play well, you've taught them how to act well, you've shown them by your own leadership how to live in that world. And yeah, now everyone wants to play with them. And that's good, because if everyone is playing with them, they're learning from all these different people and they're growing not just skillfully but socially as well. But if you ignore their bad behavior and you allow them to be, you know, a little monster in a sense, it will be super hard to break them out of that later. The more and more you let that go on, is the harder it is to turn them into a desirable player later on. And the thing is, you've already invested a lot of time and effort in this person, so you want them to grow into a desirable player. And I remember, you know, there's some guys that used to be on some of my old teams, like young guys, and they made it to professional play later on. And, you know, at the time when they played with me, they had giant egos, or they had, you know, different anger issues. And, you know, as a team or as a guild, you would have helped them break through those issues, and you would have said, you know what, this isn't good. You know, you can't just rage quit this dungeon, you can't just rage quit this game, you can't just throw your teammates, you can't go off on your own and do what you want to do. You know, have a certain level of responsibility, have a certain level of solidarity. And the lessons you would have instilled in them at that time, you don't realize how much that grows into making them into the player they can become. And the thing is, you really want to do this with your kids or, you know, the friends around you, because that translates into adulthood. It translates into the other aspects of life, and, you know, it helps you as well. It's like, you know, now people want to play not just games with you, but they want to play the game of business with you. They want to play the game of romantic relationships with you, right? All these skills it's not just in games, it's in life as well. It makes you into a better teacher, and it makes them into a better student, and that student later becomes a good teacher because they had a good teacher. And that's how it goes. And if you don't do this and you slack off on this responsibility, you know, you're not helping that person. You're creating a person that no one wants to play with. You're doing a terrible thing to them, right? Because all the people that they play with and they engage with, they'll give them false goodwill. And none of the emotions they experience in those situations will be authentic. And that creates very bad people. So yeah, don't let these players do things that make you dislike them. Because if as a friend you dislike that they do it, you know, other people just, they won't put up with it. They won't. And that will create a larger hell, not just inside that game, but inside the world itself. Because people leave these games with emotions that, even though they were created in a virtual world, they turn into real emotions. And in fact, if some of those friends are people you know in real life, and you're asking yourself, well, oh, it was just a game, like, why is this person upset? It wasn't just a game to them. They left that computer with negative emotions, and your friend is the cause. the person you didn't stop from being a monster, the person you couldn't take a second to pull aside and say, you know what you're doing, no one likes it, and you know what, I don't like it, and maybe you should stop doing it. You're not doing them a service by allowing them to be that monster.
Rule 5. Set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. Man, you look at some of these games and it's really, really easy to be critical of many aspects of it. And, you know, some matches you're going to and it's tragic, man. Like, you got some of the worst teammates and the worst picks and the worst situations. And, you know, sometimes RNG isn't on your side. And sometimes you just have the most evil, malevolent players, and they're very vindictive, and even small things you did that had nothing to do with them, they take as this big offense against them. Something small like picking up an item or killing a mob, they really take it personally, as if you reached into their screens, you reached through their screens and you slapped them. Like, they take it that personally. And the thing is, regardless of the emotions, there is some truth to that. That, you know, a lot of these games are filled with tragedy and malevolence. Like, that's the way some of these games are designed, and that's the way some players act upon it. And the thing is that when you play a game, you are making the choice to willfully overcome all the obstacles that game presents. And that doesn't just mean the opponents, it doesn't just mean the NPCs in the game, it also means your teammates and the RNG of the game. And if you don't like the result, sure, you can complain about it, but if you do, all you're doing is you're sending yourself to places you don't want to be. And, you know, as we covered in the last chapter, you know these places and you felt it, it's a hell, it's a virtual hell, it's literally called LO Hell in some of these games. And some of these people, they say things to you that are so vicious. You know, things you'd never hear in real life. Things you'd never hear in real life from your worst enemies. And you need to ask yourself, do you want to stay there with these people? Or worse, do you want to become the kind of person that says those kinds of things to other people? Are you already that kind of person? And you know, it's not just that. They say things that they hate about the game, and they hate about other people generally in the game. And, you know, they apply this prejudice to you or people like you. And they generally create a bad time for everybody involved. And the thing is, they don't just do this to the person that they feel that wronged them. They do it to their whole team. They do it to their whole guild. They do it to any player they come across. They literally go into a new game, into unrelated games, and they'll decide to cause mayhem to innocent players. And they don't just do it to the guilty, that's just too obvious. Because the best protest for them is to rage against being itself, it's to rage against the game itself. And what they really say is that, you know, I don't like the game and I don't like the people in it, it's too full of suffering. They think they are the judge, they think their feelings and opinions trump everyone else's. And the thing is, if you don't do this, you definitely know someone who does. And you never really sit and think about it, because you don't want to. Who'd want to think about that? But you should, because you perpetuate the hell you are complaining about while you're cursing at it. And you know what? You don't get to do that, especially if you don't want to be there. So stop doing stupid things. Stop lying. Stop insulting. Stop making things worse. Stop making yourself and the players around you feel weak. You know, if you did something stupid in a game that you didn't mean to do, admit it. Say, you know what, I messed up. Don't lie about it or blame other people, right? Don't insult others. Don't do things that go against making things better for yourself and for the community of that game. And you know what, during that game, you may not always know the best way to react to certain situations. You'll make mistakes, you're human. We are all ignorant in different ways. And, you know, that's whatever, it's fine. But malevolence is when you do these things and you know better. You know what you should be doing. You know when you're doing the wrong thing, but you do it anyways. You're lying to yourself and it's fueled by resentment. You're saying to yourself, I will do this bad thing because it will really teach them. It will really teach the creators of this game, or it will really teach the players in this game to treat me this way. Get that out of your gameplay. Get it out of your mindset. Get it out of your life. Set yourself in perfect order before you criticize the world. Fix your computer. Fix your connection. Play with the right people.
Rule 7. Pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient.
So, you know, I was really thinking about, and I've spent a long time thinking about this, maybe 2-3 months, in terms of how this rule, how meaning itself translates into video games. And, you know, like, one of the first things that came to mind is, you know, was actually single-player games. Many of these single-player games, we adopt a meaning, a challenge in the game that announced itself as worthwhile. And, you know, like, maybe it's just a difficult game, like, you know, like Dark Souls or I Wanna Be the Guy. Maybe it's not so much a challenge. You know, maybe it's the story. You know, some of these games have, you know, brilliant stories, you know, a couple of which are like Nier Automata and Kingdom Hearts and, you know, the Final Fantasy series. And, you know, a lot of these games have brilliant stories that have inherent meaning to them, timeless meaning and wisdom built into them, better than some of the books you could possibly read. And, you know, it's fine, like, you might tell yourself, okay, you know, I'm not that great at some of these games, or I can't get past this boss, or I'm not the best judge of how great the story are in these games. But you play them anyways, you know, like, as a flawed person, you found something that announced itself as worthwhile, something that has meaning, and that's an instinct deep inside of you. It's a form of vision. And when you play these games and you feel it, you know you're in the right place and it's at the right time, and that place is between chaos and order. And these are real places. You know, roughly speaking, your right hemisphere, you know, it's very good at understanding chaos, and your left hemisphere is really good at understanding order. But the thing is that you can't just stay with the things you already know, because you already know them. That's boring. And you can't go in places that you know nothing about, because you'll just feel in that chaos, and you'll feel very low in that chaotic state. But meaning happens when you're right between those two, right between chaos and order. And you know when that is, because things line up. You know, maybe it's a game you've been really excited for, and, you know, you've played similar games, so you understand the mechanics behind the game, so you have a certain level of control over it. But there's also the aspect of the unknown. You haven't discovered the story, you haven't discovered the new, you know, the new stages and the new characters and the new story in this game. And that excites you, it arouses you. And the thing is that, you know, I'm going to do a whole podcast on this, but there's something called flow, a state called flow, where we get into where we lose time and space, where we're swallowed up by the task, and it's fun and it's invigorating, and nothing else matters in that moment. It's a point of focus. It's this place where amazing things happen, where, you know, we do these amazing plays that we never figured we could possibly do. You know, things almost move in slow motion sometimes. We see the world so clearly, and we react to certain things in the game in rocket speed. Or maybe you just get so swallowed up by the story, by the meaning of the story, that, you know, you really forget where you are. So the thing about experiences is that you don't want to play games or be in circumstances that are just expedient, because that sends you down. Like, you know, you might have your phone, or you might be at your PC or at your console, and you just play the quickest game that's nearby, and maybe you get a quick dopamine surge from that, but you don't really feel that good after. You don't feel that good, especially, you know, sometimes it's the wrong player. Like, you played with a player who was there, not the people that you have meaningful games with. And you feel worse after, like, it got you off the hook, it scratched that itch of you wanting to play, but it generally makes you feel worse. But the thing is that meaning doesn't do that. Meaning doesn't sacrifice the future for the present. Meaning puts you exactly where you should be. And you can always tell where that is, because it feels right. You can feel it. It's a physiological sense that you're in the right place at the right time. You know, follow that path, because that's what's going to help you defeat all the tragedy and malevolence in these games. Meaning is the antidote to that. And I'm going to tell you, it's like, you know, I remember when I played you know, World of Warcraft, and I've spent years of my life in that game, like both intentionally and unintentionally. And I just remember there's so many things in World of Warcraft I dislike, you know, all the farming and the leveling and the multiple characters and crafting and the auction house. And there's so much things about that game that maybe it was fun for other people, but I dislike. The real thing I loved about that game is that I loved the dungeons. I loved the teamwork required. I loved the creativity of the bosses. I loved the story behind the dungeons, behind the raids, you know. And I'd always feel bad when I had to go do a million other things, you know, like, you know, you might be in a role-playing guild or, you know, a PvP guild. And, you know, I found that I really needed to be in a raid guild. I really needed to be in a raid guild. And, you know, you look at other games as well, is that sometimes you play in stages that you don't want to play in maps you don't want to play. And you know why you hate that map, you know you dislike it. And there's a difference between trying to overcome that obstacle or realizing that that obstacle, it's not the best obstacle for you to overcome. And, you know, this flow, this meaning, what I'm talking about, you might say, is this real? Is this just a made-up thing? It's like, no, it's super real. It's more real than suffering and evil itself. And it's possible for you to get that multiple times per week. It's not just a mental thing, it's in your body. It's literally a place in space and time. You almost mentally exit space and time when you're in that zone. In sports, it's called in the zone. It's called being on a hot streak, you know? And your being is telling you that. Your being knows where that is. You can think about it right now. It's like, where have I felt that? Was it in the middle of a team fight? Was it during a calculation of making a certain play in a trading card game? You know where you get to that point the most. And what you need to do is you need to learn how to be there as often as possible. You know, maybe, you know, I remember with raids, like the really serious ones, you know, sometimes it just happens on weekends, you know. You know, with other games, the community is so tumultuous that, you know, getting a good game, like a real good game, sometimes it takes like 10 tries, take 10 different queues, you know. Find out how to replicate being in that state, you know, whatever you need to do to get there, because that's the state you're going to find that you grow the fastest in, because it's in the right place between order and chaos. It's that space between where your skills meet the accurate challenge level and your emotions, your excitement for that situation makes you rise up and hit a new level. And the thing is that if you replicate this, if you pick the right place and the right way to play that game and the right people to play that game with, you know, and if you write the right ways that motivate you to grow in that game, you don't know how good you can be. We don't know the upper limits of that. And I believe that's how the best players, the pros in the world, get that good. They've found, that's why some of them as well, you consider, oh, they're only good at this role, they're a one-trick pony. They've found the place where their flow exists, and instead of being distracted in all these different directions, they found the exact perfect character or the exact perfect stage or the exact perfect circumstance to execute their meaning, to execute their flow. And that's how they become the best player. And you need to do that right now. Rule 8, tell the truth or at least don't lie. So, you know, during this podcast, we would have spoken about how much your actions and words matter. So there'll be a little bit of reiteration here. But the thing is that people really underestimate how much their actions and words matter. And they think to themselves, you know, like, what importance am I? I'm playing a game with, you know, potentially thousands or millions of players in some circumstances. You know, the things I say and do can't matter that much, does it? But, you know, like, some of you say that and some of you don't know better, but the others of you that are smart enough to know the difference, there's a huge level of hypocrisy in what you say and do, because a lot of you still do a lot of bad things in these games, and you do it thinking it's going to affect something. And then you'll come listening to this podcast and you say, oh, it doesn't really matter. Except if you bothered to do that action in the game, you believed it mattered at that point in time. So either you were lying to yourself then, or you're lying to yourself now. And, you know, like, you might say to yourself, okay, well, I don't matter. And the thing is that that's pretty convenient for you, because if that's the case, that means you get to continue whatever you're doing, getting what I say. You don't get to have any responsibility. And the price you pay for that is that you become nihilistic, right? And that's fine for you, because a lot of people think nihilism or not caring is cool. But it's not, because all you're really doing is creating world circumstances. And the right way to actually look at it is that you are node in the network. You are a player in the community. So in a week, you know, some of these games we play, you know, you could join a Battle Royale style game like Paladins or Fortnite or PUBG. And, you know, in one game there's maybe 100 players. So if you played 10 games for the week, you would have interacted with 1,000 players. Or if you play League, any multiplayer game, right, you would have probably interacted with, you know, maybe 1,000 people through a week, right? And that's not that difficult with League or Dota or mobiles as well. You know, there's about 10 players in a game. You know, you play 10 games, that's 100 people. You know, that's 100 people in a day. So it's not... And some of you play a lot more of those games, because a lot of those games, they end up in, you know, early surrenders, or you win really quickly, or something like that. So sometimes it's more, sometimes a little less. But the point is that, okay, let's say you interact with 1,000 people, you know, during a week, right? Well, it doesn't matter, a month, whatever. Do they know 1,000 people? Because a lot of them are playing just as much as you are. 1,000 times 1,000, that's 1 million. And the thing is, you're at the center of that node. And you might say, okay, well, I don't think what I do affects your existence in that game. Creates the bigger game. You're part of that network. Without you, a lot of those games wouldn't even happen. Without players to play a game, games die. Without an active community, you know, no one's talking, no one's trading ideas, no one's getting better. You're an important part of that network. Whether you're low skilled or high skilled, whether you're very communicative or you're not that communicative, you know. And you know what's very interesting? What's very interesting is that it's not just the network inside that community. These networks, they communicate with each other. You know, like some of these games have multiple publishers. Like the developers know the mindsets of these different communities. And you know, you can go on different forums, you can go on Facebook and Reddit and all these different places. And the people who make up the community of these games also make up the community of many games. So their mindsets and prejudice and words, they make their way into multiple facets of these communities, and it spreads. So, and you know what you did to them in these games, you know, it also spreads. So don't underestimate the power of your speech. Do not underestimate the power of truth. There is nothing more powerful. So make sure you tell the truth, or at least don't lie. That's a start. And the thing is that, you know, a lot of people, they have a certain hypocritical way of talking on these forums, because they know a lot of the bad things they did in certain games, but they talk about as if they were, you know, a perfect player, you know, and they're lying to themselves. And the thing is that one of the reasons they do that is that they want a certain public effect. They want people to respond to them a certain way. So in order to tell the truth, you have to let go of the outcome. You have to say what you think, as biased as you might be, as flawed as you might be honest about your flaws, as ignorant as you might be, that you're gonna say what you think truthfully and with good intentions, and you will deal with the consequences of that. And there's a level of faith in that. You have to have a level of faith in it. But the thing is that nothing helps these situations better, nothing improves games better and improves players faster than the truth. Really telling someone what's wrong with the game or what's wrong with the way they play, right? And it shows up to that person how seriously they want to take your advice, but make it truthful. And you know, you might say, okay, I don't want to pay the price for that, I don't want to be seen a certain way, or I don't want to spend time trying to explain the truth to people the way I see it. But you'll always pay a price for it either way. It's just that in this case, you get to choose the price. And I'll get into a little deeper right now, actually. So okay, you know, you might ask yourself, you know, for example, what's the price of not seeing what you think on certain forums? Well, the thing is that a lot of developers actually read the forums, and a lot of community managers read the forums. And if you say something, and we've seen this a million times, is that if what you said picks up traction, they literally make changes to the game based on that, at least if they're good developers. And if you never said what you said, and if people didn't get behind what you said, some of these changes would not have been made, you know.
I remember we used to play a game called Heroes of Newt, and I made like maybe 4 or 5 dreads, and you know, that's another move or clone, like those are me or whatever. And you know, maybe 2 of my dreads got ignored, but the other 2, like, you know, the way you cast in the game and the way you program dropping certain spells, like, you know, developers listen to it, you know, like they actually change engineers' gun in response to that, and it made the game so much better. And some of the characters they change end up becoming some of my favorite characters, and the community's favorite characters, and the game improved exponentially. And in some of these situations, you may not feel safe to speak. You might feel like people attack. But the thing is that if you're truthful and you're honest, there's really nothing for someone to attack. They can challenge your views, and maybe you have to change it. But if it's the truth, then it's not really flawed in its structure. It might be flawed in its design, but not its structure, because you know, nothing is more powerful than truth. And it's okay to not feel safe, because it's never that safe to speak. You know, it's, you know, some places are more treacherous than others. But the thing is, you want to be able to pay the price for who you are, for expressing yourself. You don't want to be a silent stooge or an unheard of player, because after a while you just have no self-respect, and you know, you lose all power you have in that situation, and you start to resent others, and you start to resent developers, and you start to resent games of that type. So you're paying a price. Either way, you're paying a price. So pay the right price and tell the truth. And you know, like in some of these situations, you know, when you're talking to other players or you're talking to other people in the community, is that again, you lie, and a lot of you think that you'll get away with that. But no, you don't. You don't get away with that. All this community around you, all this game, all this reality, you're gonna lie. You're gonna say things that's not true. You're gonna say things that's not in harmony with the situation. And you think it's gonna work? And you think it's not gonna have any consequences? That's your theory. If those consequences don't hit you now, it will definitely hit you in a roundabout way later on. Whether it's in the same game, similar game, players in that game, or even the way you approach certain games, it will come back at you. And you need to tell the truth and face what comes as a result of it. Or at least don't lie. Maybe you're not strong enough to tell the truth yet. Maybe sometimes you want to stay silent. Fine, but at least don't lie. And yeah, that's a start.
Rule 9. Assume that the person you're listening to might know something you don't. So when I think about this rule, and maybe a couple others, it's kind of about communication. So what you want to do is that when you enter into a conversation with someone in the game, or preferably a friend, a teammate, you know, a clan member, you kind of want to assume that they know something you don't. And that's not always very clear, because even something as objective and data-based as these games, there's a lot of subjective perception involved. There's a lot of unknown future potentials, you know, like what if I use this item? What if I played this certain way? What if I played this way, but I cut back a little bit on the aggression? And it's very hard to be 100% sure in different situations. You know, sometimes even if the numbers go one way, sometimes there's ways to break through numbers, just like in real sports. You can do things where, you know, no one can basically have predicted. And so you have to really sort out what winning means, because winning an argument with a teammate, it's not always the best thing, especially if there's a nugget of goal knowledge you can extract out of it. And the thing is that you end up sending them down, and then it ends up being that they don't want to come to you with new ideas or things that they noticed. And maybe most of the ideas aren't good, but some of them could be really good, or some of them, even if it's simple, it could remind you of things that could work out really well if you help them put it together. And when you engage in an argument with them or conversation, you might be verbally better.
And you know, this reminds me of a friend or a couple of friends of mine. It's the kind of person where they may be a bit better, a bit smarter. You come to them with an idea, like you know, interesting strategy you have, and instead of taking a second to really think about, you know, the idea or how to make it better, they just criticize you, and like, they remind you of the times you failed in the past, and you know how funny and powerful those moments will, and discourage you from having your own ideas. And the thing is that much of the time is that you can see even in the near future where your idea may have been very helpful, or at least piece of your idea would have been very helpful, and they would have ran into a brick wall. And that's why winning when you're wrong is a bad idea, because you may run into walls you may not even know that you're going to run into. And sometimes it's that they can see the things that you can't, but they can't verbalize it. So that's why you have to really listen to the other person, is that if they're trying to tell you something, you should really try to figure out what they're trying to see. Get it clear, you know? Think about it. Figure it out. Figure out if they are right, or at least how right they are. Because sometimes someone might be, you know, 10% right or 50% right, but that's right enough for you to fill in the other half of it. And you don't want to just roll over or just agree either. You know, you can stand your ground and you can maintain your perspective, but you want to be able to listen and learn, you know? So you really want this with your teammates and your friends. And something else I'll say about this is that in these games, when you have teammates and different players, don't waste time talking to people who aren't listening. The people, it's the kind of the reverse opposite of this rule. Like, many of these people assume that they're not going to listen, and that they're not going to take what you have to say seriously. And if the person is receptive and you try for the betterment of that game and that person's skill, and they're receptive, then, you know, go ahead, keep it simple. But if the person's not receptive, end that conversation, because many times we end up just distracting the person from playing the game and figuring things out for themselves, which I'll cover in a future room. But yeah, assume that the person you're listening to might know something you don't, and don't try to make others listen to you if they're not in the mental position to listen to you. And you know, there's a saying that JP, and I heard a lot of people say that, I mean, all year it's been really ringing true for me in all different situations. Don't cast pearls before swine. And what that basically means is that, you know, don't give treasures, don't give great ideas, don't give these things to someone who can't appreciate it. It's the same thing when, you know, you have a really, like a really cool show or a really nice new anime that you're trying to get your friends interested in, and you know it's awesome and you know it's great, and maybe they just don't like the genre, or maybe they don't like the animation, or something small, and there's literally millions of people that love that movie or anime or genre, whatever it is, and that person does it, and you keep trying to get them to do it or to listen, and they won't. So, and that person should assume that you know something that they don't, that you know something that's great about that they're not seeing, that they're not experiencing, you know? So that's all I really have to say about that.
Rule 10, be precise in your speech.
You know, and a lot of these rules, again, they are sometimes reiteration or saying the same thing in many different ways. The thing is that, you know, there's the idea of the logos, which is very sacred in Western culture, and it's basically about speech and how important speech is. So what you say literally affects the structure of being. It affects reality. And we've already spoken about this in a couple of rules, but we haven't really spoken about how important it is for you to bring things into the light. You have to name them so you can talk about them. You know, you have to, sometimes you notice something and you ask yourself, is this real? Well, it's a pattern you're seeing, and you know what, humans are pattern seeking creatures, and a pattern is revealing itself to you, it's showing itself to you, and you're seeing the effects of that pattern, not just in the game, but on yourself physically and mentally. It's giving you discomfort. And the thing is that there's lots of things that are almost made up names or made up terms in the gaming world that we didn't really understand or think were real things that we had to deal with before. But now they're common knowledge, they're common words. You know, some of those things are noobs, you know. Some of those things are meta or smurfs and or twinks and all these different words that seemingly didn't exist in English language before, at least they weren't used in this context. And all of a sudden we have names for these interesting patterns and experiences that occur, and now that it's named, now you can deal with them. And yeah, it becomes this thing that's actually explainable. It's not impossible to explain anymore. Now people can understand exactly what you mean. They can understand the problem.
And if you can't, what you're really telling yourself is that the problem is so big that you cannot bring your attention to bear on it. And yeah, the nameable is far less scary than the unnameable. That's why in Harry Potter, Voldemort is so terrifying. It's he who must not be named. And, you know, your imagination, it runs wild with that. Your imagination is an old thing. It's seen lots of horrible things. And that's why the dark is so scary. Till you put the light on, your mind fills the darkness, the chaos, the unnameable, with all these monsters, big and small. And you know what's funny about Voldemort? He was this angry little kid who grew up into a bald, pale guy with no nose. And it's like, this is who you're all afraid of? And sure, he was vicious, so fair enough, but once they brought their attention to bear on him, they could figure out how to beat him with the Horcruxes, etc. I might be pronouncing that wrong, but you know, you Harry Potter fans know exactly what I'm talking about. And you know, it's the same thing when you have a problem with a teammate. See what you can say about the situation carefully and precisely. Just like speaking the truth, you have to let go of the outcome. And see, there's a reason that freedom of speech is such a respected and even worshipped right in our culture. And it's basically sacred because it brings things out of the murky water. It lets us speak about racism and sexism and tyranny, everything. We can isolate the issue, we can be precise in our speech so others can bring their attention to bear on the issue. And sometimes it's unsightly, but we have to do it so we can figure it out. Rule 11, don't bother kids when they're skateboarding. So, I was wondering how this rule exactly translates into the gaming world, and I think I got it. It's that you have to let people play. You have to let them test things out. And you know, we talked about the flow state and how it's between order and chaos. It's right between enthusiasm and control, or arousal and control. It's that middle point where your emotions and skill come together in a moment of, you know, pure magic. So when someone makes a huge play, right, like you feel good, you feel great, you feel like you witness something special, you witness something that you did not think could happen. And it's because that person practiced being creative, courageous. They practiced finding the line between their skill and reality, treading it to attain a new level of play. So when these players in your games are trying something new, you know, don't condemn them. Don't bring them down, don't make them feel bad, because you'll also find that even some of the best gamers, they'll tell you the truth that, you know, certain things wasn't even their idea. They saw someone attempt something badly and they realized how they could change that, how they could improve upon it. And you know, some of you think you want a game where everyone does the standard method, the standard strategies. They use the standard picks and weapons and items. And are you sure that's really what you want? You want every game to basically be the same? You want to walk away from the game less entertained than you were before? I mean, sure, sometimes people go too far into the unknown and they create a mess. But other times, you get that moment of, oh wow, that works. I did not know you can do that. I really didn't know you. It's like riding a rocket in Fortnite or doing a 360 no-scope in an FPS game. And, you know, it's like when Justin Wong parried all those Chun-Li kicks a long time ago at the tournament, or that big play where Faker versus Zed, where Ryu's on Zed, and they're playing the exact same person, and they end up in this epic battle of pure perception, anticipation, reaction time, and skill, and Faker comes out ahead, and you're like, wow, I did not know that could happen. And you ask yourself, you know, how can I get to that level? Or why am I not at that level? And that's because people never let you be courageous. They never let you face danger like that. They never put you in tough situations. And, you know, I have a friend, we tend to play the same way. And it's funny because we ended up both at the top of, you know, our respective gaming fields. And it's that in some games we like to put ourselves into very tough situations just to see how we can wiggle ourselves out of it. It's like, you know, it's like when you tower dive in MOBAs, for instance. Years ago, the absolute rule was do not tower dive. Tower diving is for dumb, stupid people, and it will always get you killed. Now professional play in all of these movers is based around tower diving efficiently and knowing when to do it, and it's one of the best things you can do early game. So you have to let people play. Do not bother children when they're skateboarding. Don't bother children when they're figuring things out, when they're testing things out.
Rule 12. Pet a cat when you encounter one.
So when people hear this rule, they think it's all petting cats. And they're like, I have to pet a cat. Like, maybe I don't even like cats. And that's not really the point. The point about it is that no matter what's going on, you're supposed to be able to pause and appreciate what's going on and to have a certain level of awareness. So you have to understand that you will be faced with suffering and tragedy no matter who you are. Some of it will be deserved and some of it will not. When you're overwhelmed by crisis and it's so bad that you can't think about later in the game, or you can't think about the next game, or you can't think about tomorrow's games or next week's, often you want to give up. You feel like you're done. You feel like the game is done. But there's always something you can do right now that makes tomorrow better, or the next game better. You can practice something small. You can figure out something else in the game. You can start figuring out what already went wrong and how you could fix it next time. And you may say that, you know, in that moment you feel so triggered, you feel so tilted, you feel so frustrated by the situation. And the answer to that is, on how you deal with that, is that you shorten the time frame. You bring your attention to bear on how to survive the next moment. Maybe that's too long. How about the next minute? How about the next 10 seconds? You just have to focus on the present. You know, sometimes it's over. Most of the time, it's not. People are tough. You are tough. If you face it, if you truly stand up to it, you can do it without becoming corrupt. You can take the steps to fix it. You have to be really alert during these moments of suffering. And you have to be aware in the beauty in life. And I'll even add a personal touch to it, is that sometimes you have to be aware of the beauty of certain tragedies. Like, man, this is horrible. But it might also be hilarious. It might also be interesting to watch. I don't think I can win, but hey, maybe the art in this game is pretty good. You have to look for the sparkling crystals in darkness when things are going the worst that you could possibly think of. You have to narrow your time frame. You have to be grateful for what you have. And sometimes it will still be tragic, but maybe you can make it not absolute hell. You want to avoid taking bad things and making them unbearable. We need to not make terrible things worse. If we did that, then maybe you could deal with the terrible things as they came along. And maybe you'll be a happier person for it. Maybe the world will be a better place. And you can ask yourself in these moments, do you have something better to do? Are you just going to sit there and complain and feel horrible and feel crushed by the suffering? You have to deal with it. Pick up that suffering. And you know, if you can pick up your own suffering, the people around you find the strength to pick up theirs. And that's the 12 rules for life. So yeah, thanks for listening all the way to the end. And I really want to do more podcasts like this. This one took forever though, because I've really been thinking about this for like months now. And you know, I've been thinking about it while listening to JBP Wave, and that's done by Akira the Don. And it's a really cool remix. It's a lot of inspirational talk over some really epic music. And it's been hella fun to listen to and to conceptualize all these different things. And I also have to thank the original man himself, Jordan Peterson. And definitely go out and buy his book, 12 Rules for Life, or get it on Amazon, get it on Audible. You know, I have the book, I have the audiobook. It's great. Just get it. It might change your life. Or I'd say it will definitely change an aspect of your life for the better. Like, you have my seal of approval right there. And I mean, it's a best-selling book. I think it was like at the top of Amazon in multiple categories. Best-selling all over the world, like Canada, Europe, all over the place. So yeah, that's basically it. And look out for the next one, because the other ones, they won't just be about how to act in games, but it will also be about how to get increasingly better at a fast pace. And that's something I learned very early in gaming. I learned how the best people actually get good quickly. And we'll be covering that in our future podcast. So thanks for listening. Hero mode engaged. Let's go. Let's go save the world.